You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi everyone, this is your host, John Hagedorn, and this is 1001 Radio Days. Today's show, This Is Your FBI, was a radio crime drama which aired in the United States on ABC from April 6, 1945 to January 30, 1953, for a total of 409 shows. In other words, it did real well. The show featured true cases from the FBI and told it from an agent's viewpoint. FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover gave it his endorsement, considering it our show, and calling it the finest dramatic program on the air. The shows would involve everything from crackdowns on organized crime to stories of individual lawbreakers. Some were well-known crimes being worked on during that time period. The agents handled cases involving fraud, petty crime, and professional crooks, as well as clearing those falsely accused. It gives you a good insight as to what the FBI was doing 70 years ago. A great history lesson, if you will. And now, This Is Your FBI.
This is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. To your FBI, you look for national security, and to the Equitable Society for financial security. These two great institutions are dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country. Tonight, the story of a crime against the community, auto theft.
Five years ago, the theft of a car in your neighborhood was a matter of passing interest. In a newspaper, it was reported on the back pages or not at all. But today, the automobile has graduated from the luxury class to one of vital necessity. An automobile in first-class condition is a high-priced commodity, and there are hundreds of buyers for every seller. Into this fertile field of buyers at any price has moved the racketeer. A racketeer who needs only a car, a stolen car, a forged bill of sale, and an unsuspecting buyer. Mobility is his chief asset, but it's also his chief liability. Because the act of driving a stolen car across a state line is a federal offense. And the FBI, in cooperation with local law enforcement agencies, has been relentless in this war against this type of criminal. Sometimes the first lead on a case of this type comes as the result of a routine check, beginning as this one did with a couple driving along a road south of Richmond. A distinguished-looking couple, a couple just married.
How can you even see, darling? That rain is coming down so hard.
We'll stop at the next town if it doesn't let up.
Tired?
No, I feel fine.
This was a wonderful idea.
What, dear?
This trip.
Not much of a honeymoon, having to mix business in along the way.
Oh, darling, I love it. This is the way I've always wanted to live. I used to go crazy being cooped up in the same place, seeing the same people.
That can be dull.
My mother was wonderful. She couldn't understand how I just met you and 3 weeks later wanted to marry you. She said I didn't know you, didn't know your background.
Well, mothers are like that.
I just told her I didn't care. Charles, look out, we're skidding.
Faye, are you all right?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, thank heaven.
How about you?
I'm okay.
Oh.
What's the matter, dear?
Look at the front of the car.
Oh. Yeah. Let's get out.
It's all smashed.
I know. Let me help you, dear.
Thanks. Where are you going?
Just getting the license plate.
License plate? Aren't you going to call a garage?
No, it's too much bother, dear.
Then what are you going to do?
Leave the car here.
What?
Now, don't worry, sweetheart. I'll get another one tomorrow.
A car is abandoned on a road 10 miles south of Richmond. The plates are missing, but motor numbers or identification badges easily checked. 2 days later, 300 miles south of Richmond, the police paid a call at the home of one John Taylor.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes?
I've got some good news for you, sir. We found your car.
My car?
Yes, it turned up in Richmond. The local police there contacted us. It was checked through the motor number. The license plate was gone.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid there's some mistake.
Well, your name's John Taylor, isn't it?
Yes.
You own a 1938 Ford sedan?
Well, that's right. But my car's in the garage.
What?
Yes, I just put it there not 5 minutes ago.
Are you sure?
Just take a look. There. See it sticking out?
Well, has it ever been stolen?
No, never.
What's your motor number?
Oh, just a second now. Look at the registration.
I don't understand. How come your car turns up in Richmond when it's really here?
The motor number is 321-264.
Well, that's the same number, all right.
Maybe you'd better tell somebody about this.
Yeah. Maybe it'd better be the FBI.
If there is an axiom in crime, it is that a mistake will be made sooner or later. The abandoned car, the car that was wrecked on the road south of Richmond, was examined by special agents of the FBI. Portions of the motor were removed and sent to the laboratories in Washington. After certain exhaustive tests were made, a report was forwarded to the FBI Richmond field office.
What's the story, Tom?
The motor numbers were altered. A pretty good job, too.
Could the laboratory work up the original numbers?
Yes. Wait a minute. Here we are. The car was from Toledo, Ohio. Was stolen out there.
I see.
Was then registered here in Virginia under a false name and with the aid of a fictitious bill of sale.
With the idea of reselling it here, I suppose.
Yes.
Sounds like a very professional job.
I know.
What about that couple who abandoned the car?
Well, we have a general description of them from the farmer who picked them up.
He dropped them off here in Richmond?
Yes. Excuse me. Rice speaking. Yes? Yes. Wait, let me write that down.
Pencil?
I have one, thanks. Go ahead. Right. Got it. Thanks. Goodbye. Now we're getting someplace.
Who was that?
Boone. He was checking a lead that farmer gave us. He said that he dropped the couple off at a cab stand.
Yes?
Boone contacted a driver who remembered picking up a man and woman answering to the description of our suspects.
Good.
He dropped them at a downtown hotel. I think we'd better get over there right now.
Go ahead, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Take us to the fourth floor, please.
Yes.
This is the only couple who answers to the description you gave me.
Their name is Meade?
That's right. Mr. and Mrs. Charles Meade. They're very charming people.
How long have they lived here?
On and off for several weeks now.
What do you mean, on and off?
Well, they've taken several short trips, but they've kept their room.
Oh, that's a...
Go right ahead. The room is down here to the left.
Very well. Do you know anything about what business Mr. Meade is in?
Why, he's a salesman of some sort. I don't know his line.
You've talked with him?
Oh, yes, we've been quite friendly. I've dined with him several times. That's why I'm sure you must have the wrong party.
We'd like to talk with him anyway.
Here we are, 412. I'm not so sure that he's home.
Why?
Well, he borrowed my car this morning. His was being repaired.
He borrowed your car?
That's right.
Have you a pass key with you?
Yes.
I'd advise you to use it.
What for?
I have an idea that Mr. Meade is no longer a guest.
Well, goodness, I... Wait, I have a key right here. Excuse me.
Surely.
Heavens, you were right. Everything's been moved out. How did you know he'd be gone?
Because he borrowed your car. That happens to be his line of business.
Even though the human memory is inaccurate and no two people see the same object exactly alike, verbal descriptions of an individual may enable the laboratories of the FBI to create a sketch of a face that will be amazingly exact. This has been done successfully in many cases where no photograph is available in the records. A description of Charles Meade and his wife was teletyped to all law enforcement agencies in the neighboring states. But professional car thieves move swiftly. And even as the alarm was on the wires, the Meades were already established in another hotel in another city 200 miles west of Richmond.
Faye?
Yes, dear?
Did you see my brown gloves?
They're right here on the dresser.
Oh, thanks. How do I look?
Oh, very handsome.
Well, I have to run over now and see a prospect.
Charles.
Yeah?
Before you go, I'd like to talk to you about something.
Honey, I really have
This is very important. It's about you.
Well?
Darling, what do you really do?
What do you mean?
Your work.
Well, I told you, I'm a salesman.
I know that's what you've told me. But I'd like you to explain a couple of things.
Like what?
Well, the things that happened back in Richmond.
I don't know what you're talking about, honey.
That car we wrecked. You're just leaving it there.
I attended to that later. I had it sent to a garage.
I don't believe you.
Oh, well, now,
you want me to tell you what I do believe? Do you?
All right.
That was a stolen car, wasn't it? That's how you make your living.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Look, darling, I couldn't tell you.
Why?
Because I love you. I knew if you ever found out the truth, that would be the end of us. That would be the end of everything. What are you laughing at?
You.
Huh?
Why did you think you could keep it from me, Charles? And why did you think it would matter?
Faye.
Come here.
Well?
I think it's wonderful.
What?
I love it. And I want to work right along with you.
The bride of Charles Meade proved a willing partner in her husband's business. Faye Meade had expansive ideas and put them immediately into operation. In rapid succession, from widely separated sections, came reports of stolen cars. Each theft had the same pattern, almost the same conditions. The FBI was reasonably sure that Meade and company was behind each one. But the Meades were still at large, 400 miles from the scene of the last theft, in another city. In another hotel room.
I'll get it, dear.
Hello, Charlie.
Oh, hello there, Stanton. Come on in.
Thanks.
I don't believe you've met my wife.
No. How did you, ma'am?
Hello, Mr. Stanton.
I wonder if we can go someplace and talk, Charlie.
What's wrong with right here?
Well, this is about our business.
My wife knows all about that.
Oh.
So what's on your mind?
Well, my reason for coming up here was to tell you that we're going to split up our partnership.
Why? What's wrong?
Nothing wrong. I just think the time has come to quit.
You mean you'd rather hook up with someone else?
No, I just want to get out of the whole business. My garage is doing well. I'm making enough money legitimately. I don't want to spoil that.
Well...
Charles.
Yes, dear?
May I ask Mrs. Stanton a few questions?
Well, sure. Go ahead.
Mr. Stanton, you've made a lot of money with Charles, haven't you?
Well, yes, but...
I believe he even set you up in this garage in the first place. He wanted a front to dispose of the cars.
That's right.
Then it's not going to make it very easy if you walk out on him.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Meade.
That doesn't help.
Look, I never liked this business in the first place. I only did it because I needed money, desperately.
I know, but after
Wait,
all,
Charles.
What about...
Mr. Stanton, I'd like to point out something to you. We have 8 cars stored away. 8 cars that my husband worked very hard to get. Now you're going to sell those cars for him, just as you originally agreed.
I can do it.
Then you leave us only one choice.
What do you mean?
We'll have to spoil that respectable front you've been maintaining.
Now, just a minute.
I mean it, Mr. Stanton.
I believe you do.
Now, when do we send you the 8 cars?
To the FBI, the case of Charles Meade was open. And an open case means that the entire facilities of the FBI are working without pause, searching every possibility, every source where a clue may be. The motor vehicle records of the state of Virginia were exhaustively checked and rechecked. It was discovered that over 2 dozen cars were fraudulently registered. Cars from over 2 dozen states. Motor numbers changed, fictitious bills of sale issued. Most of them had been sold to innocent dealers. Dealers whose recollection of the seller reconfirmed the picture of Charles Meade. One sale, a sale of 8 cars to a garage in North Carolina, was a real clue. A real possibility for positive information. Agents of the FBI paid a visit to Mr. Stanton, the owner of that garage.
See, gentlemen, I'm just at a loss to understand any of this. I purchased those cars in good faith.
You had no idea that they were stolen, Mr. Stanton?
None whatsoever.
Who sold them to you?
Was various people.
People you knew?
No.
According to the registration records in Virginia, one man sold all of those cars to you, Mr. Stanton.
Well,
suppose you give us the real facts.
Well, one man did sell them. But he told me he represented several owners.
Who was this man?
Name was, Crawford. George Crawford.
How did you meet him?
He answered an ad I put in the papers. And then he came here at my garage.
Can you describe him?
Not too well.
Do you mind if we take a look around the garage here, Mr. Stanton?
What for?
Just a routine inspection.
Very well. Go ahead. I'll go out back to the office to get you those registrations.
Thanks.
What are you interested in, Tom?
That workbench over there. Come on. I noticed it on the way in. It had some very familiar equipment on it. Look it over.
Well, electric drills, buffing machine.
Not forgetting those sandpaper discs and that steel brush. Very handy equipment to alter motor numbers on stolen cars.
Yes. Do you think...
That came from the office.
Yes, come on.
Well, it looks like Mr. Meade just lost a partner.
We momentarily close the Federal Bureau of Investigation file on Charles Meade, car thief. We will return to this case in just a moment. Let's suppose that all the members of the Equitable Society decided to live together in one community. The result would be a city almost as large as Chicago. For this society now has over 3,200,000 members. Actually, of course, these Equitable members are widely distributed. Every state in the Union is largely represented. And by the same token, every section of the nation benefits by the investments of Equitable Society funds. The premium dollars sent in by Equitable members are used to promote industry and agriculture in all parts of the country. Equitable dollars help finance shipbuilders on the Pacific Coast, ranchers in Wyoming, oil men in Texas, miners in Minnesota, coal producers in Pennsylvania, farmers and workers throughout the land. And so this great mutual organization is indeed well named the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. In both its membership and the distribution of its investments, it takes in the entire United States. And so you see, by serving its members, the Equitable Society serves America. And now back to the file on Charles Meade, car thief.
In the FBI headquarters in Washington, there is row upon row of file cabinets containing cases marked complete. An examination of any one of these will show that every thread, every rumor, every bit of information pertinent to that case, however minute, has been investigated to a conclusion. There are no loose ends, only complete and irrefutable proof. The suicide of the garage keeper enabled the FBI to uncover many additional facts regarding Charles Meade. Special agents conducted an intensive search in the dead man's garage. Records were combed over, correspondence checked. Finally, out of this painstaking work, there emerged a clue. A small clue, a letter that had been mailed to the garage man by Meade over a year before. A letter sent from Portland, Oregon. A letter with a return address. A teletype was sent to the Portland field office and a special agent was sent to the address to investigate.
I bet this has something to do with my nephew, Charlie.
Charles Meade?
That's him. I was right, huh?
Do you know where he is?
Nope, I haven't seen him in over a year. He went east to Cleveland, but I know he isn't there anymore.
Why not?
Because I wrote him at the address he gave me. The letter was returned.
May I have that address anyway?
Sure, but I don't think it'll do you any good. Charlie moves fast and often.
Wanted notices on Charles Meade were sent out from the FBI headquarters in Washington for national distribution. Meanwhile, the one lead, the slender lead, the year-old address in Cleveland, was followed up by a special agent there.
No, Mr. Meade hasn't lived here in, let me see now, at least 8 months.
Did he leave any forwarding address?
No, he just packed his trunks and left.
Trunks?
Yeah, two of them.
How were they moved?
Well, I believe it was American Express.
Thank you very much.
A search of the Express Company records, a long, tedious search, was finally rewarded. The record showed that two trunks belonging to one Charles Meade were picked up at the Cleveland address and delivered to an apartment house in Louisville, Kentucky.
Charles Meade moved out about 2 months ago. I understand he went back east to get married.
Where in the east?
He didn't say.
Did he leave any trunks?
Yes, two of them.
Did he take them with him?
No, he had them sent to storage.
Here in Louisville?
Yes, to the Acme Storage Warehouse.
I hope there's something in these trunks after getting a search warrant and all. Let's examine this one first.
Right.
Now, let's see. One, two, three suits and a top coat here.
We'll try the drawers. Well.
What is it?
A box of keys. Car keys.
That would be Mr. Meade, all right.
Here's some cans of automobile paint.
For retouching purposes.
Yes. What story did you get from the warehouse people?
They said he paid them 2 months in advance.
And no further word from him?
No, none at all.
That 2 months should be up.
It is. He owes the money now.
Well, we've got one good chance then.
That he'll get in touch with the warehouse?
Yes. And give us a chance to get in touch with him.
The special agents kept in constant touch with the warehouse. One day, 2 weeks after their first visit, a letter arrived. A letter containing a money order. A money order signed by Charles Meade. But Meade was still clever. Although the letter was postmarked St. Louis, Missouri, there was no return address. The money order, however, was issued at the Gardner Postal Station, which is located in the suburbs. Special agents went there at once.
That's his complete description.
I see.
Do you recall him at all?
I'm trying to think.
The money order was issued last Tuesday.
Well, that might be a help. Tuesday. And that was a pretty slow day.
Did any strangers come in here at all?
Yes. Yes, I remember now. A fellow came in here around noontime.
Yes?
He was Well, say, he looked just like the fellow you described.
Are you sure?
Of course. I remember him real well now. He told me he was just driving through.
Did he say where he was heading?
No. Oh, now wait, though. He did ask one question.
What was that?
He wanted to know about a good tourist camp.
Yes?
I recommended Brockton's place. That's about 6 miles further out.
Brockton's place. Let's go, Tom.
Charles. Charles.
Yeah?
Are you going to sleep all day, darling?
No. No, I'm getting up. What time is it?
Almost noon.
Oh, I'm dead.
You got a good night's sleep.
Honey, a dozen nights' sleep would just about get me even.
Come on now, get up. We have to start packing.
Yeah, I know. That's just about all we do in life. I'm getting awful sick.
Now, let's not go into that again.
But, Faye, look, we've got enough money now, enough money to settle down in one spot and enjoy ourselves for a while.
Oh, no.
Well, honey...
Listen, Charles, I've told you. I spent all my life being settled in one spot. I never want to do it again.
Oh, we can't keep living like this. Bad hotels, tourists,
I like them. I love going from place to place, and that's what I intend to do. With or without you, darling.
What do you mean?
If you want that settling down business, you do it without me.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
I mean it.
Okay, honey. You win.
Who's that?
How do I know? Wait. Yeah?
How are you, Mr. Meade?
Who are you?
We're special agents of the FBI.
Charles.
Stay where you are.
Well, it looks like you're going to get your way, darling. We're settling down.
Abnormal conditions brought on by the war have opened lucrative fields for the criminal. Lucrative temporarily because the criminal has to risk a battle of wits and a battle of endurance with the FBI. And that is a battle he cannot win. Last year alone, over $5 million worth of stolen cars were recovered, and over 2,000 car thieves were convicted. The FBI is and will be relentless in the apprehension of anyone threatening the security or rights of the people of the United States. It is your organization. It is part of the government. And the government is you.
You'll hear about the disposition of this case in just a minute. Will you join the Equitable Society in a salute? A salute to the men who weld the plates and hammer home the rivets. To the men and women whose strong right arms have built ships and more ships far faster than Nazi U-boats and Jap suicide planes could sink them. Since war was declared, America's shipyards have added 100,000 vessels to the Navy. And for the Navy and Merchant Marine together have launched $40 billion worth of shipping. And all this, in addition to countless repair jobs on all types of vessels, from battleships and flat tops to submarines and minesweepers. That's proof, if any proof was needed, that the way we do things in America is more than a match for any other way or any other system, bar none. Members of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States are proud to know that their premium dollars have backed up the shipbuilders, that Equitable Society funds are invested in this, America's second largest war industry, as well as in scores of other great manufacturing enterprises now concentrating on war production. In wartime, Equitable Society dollars are fighting dollars, and at all times, they are security dollars for you, your home, and your country. Mm-hmm.
After being indicted by a federal grand jury at Columbus, Ohio, Charles Meade and his wife pleaded guilty to violating the National Motor Vehicle Theft Act. They were each given sentences totaling 20 years in a federal penitentiary.
The incidents used in tonight's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Van Cleve. Your narrator was Frank Lovejoy. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. Now, this is Carl Frank speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time for This is Your FBI.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.
This is Your FBI. This is Your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. To Your FBI, you look for national security. To the Equitable Society for financial security. These two great institutions are dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country. Tonight, the story of a crime against society. Murder.
In the crime-mad era of the 1920s and early 30s, state boundaries proved havens for the gangster criminals who plagued the nation. Law enforcement agencies had to rely upon complex systems of extradition to bring these lawbreakers to justice. But since 1934, since Congress gave the FBI jurisdiction to track down these fugitives, pursue them across state borders, this type of roving criminal has almost disappeared. For the criminal, there is now no refuge in flight. A proof of this, a man who called himself John Dixon is an excellent example. His flight began in a city in Florida, in a well-to-do home in that city, in fact, in the living room of that home.
You go ahead and put on the light, will you, dear?
Okay.
Double features always wear me out.
I wish you'd felt that way before we left. I've always...
Just stay where you are, folks.
Fred!
Quiet, lady.
Who are you?
I was just doing a little work here. I'm afraid you came in at the wrong time.
Fred, he's a burglar.
Lady, I told you to be quiet. I sometimes get nervous with a gun in my hand.
Martha,
you're very smart. Now, just come in and sit down.
Very well. Come on, dear.
All right.
Spades are down, bones cut. We shouldn't be disturbed. Now, there's just one other precaution I think I'd better take. There's some cloth and adhesive tape on that table there. I brought it along just in case.
Well?
Your wife will use it on you first.
Fred.
Please, Martha. You must obey.
You won't mind it. Come on, put it around his mouth.
Oh. I'm sorry, dear.
Oh, yeah.
Did I hear you folks say you'd been in the movies?
Yes.
What'd you see?
I don't remember.
Just put the adhesive over the cloth.
Like this?
Yes. Have you seen the new Crosby picture, Central?
No.
It's the honey. I caught it last night.
Is that too tight for you?
Leave it that way, lady. That's perfect.
Poor darling.
Now, I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you the same treatment.
Oh, please.
Sorry, lady.
Oh, no, please. Oh, no.
I always hate to do a job this way. But you must appreciate my dear. Just stay still. That's it. We'd only come home 15 minutes later. I'd have been out of here. And we wouldn't have had to go through all this. There you are. Now, if you'll both sit down, I can tie you up. Right over there will do. Come along. That's good. I have a few of your possessions in that bag. I'm afraid I'm going to need transportation, too. Have you your car keys, sir? In which pocket? Fine. Now, why don't I sit down with you? Have one little farewell drink and leave.
With the crime committed, the criminal's flight begins. It's a casual flight at first. He feels secure in the knowledge that his victims are helpless, that they cannot report him for many hours. So he drives north in their car, drives on a main highway, drives to a refreshment stand on the outskirts of town.
Good evening.
Oh, hi, Mac.
Can I get something to eat?
Sure.
How about a hamburger?
Sorry, Mac. Meatless day.
Oh.
Cheeseburger?
Fine.
Huh?
I said fine.
That's what I thought you said. I just ain't used to hearing it anymore. Everybody's got complaints. All they do is beep. All the time, beep.
Who owns that Buick sedan over there?
Oh, that's yours, ain't it, Mac?
Yes. Why?
Can I see your registration?
Of course. It's in the car. Come on, I'll get it for you.
Okay.
Is there any trouble, officer?
Yeah. This car was reported stolen.
Well, it must be a mistake. I've been driving it all day.
I still want to see the registration.
Really? It's in the glove compartment here. Here we are.
Hey, what happened?
Cancel my order, Mac.
The crime of robbery, the fugitive has added the crime of murder. The two shots killed the policeman who sought to question him regarding the ownership of the car. The flight is not so casual now. John Dixon abandoned the stolen car and hurriedly went to a nightclub on the outskirts of the city.
Hello?
Hmm?
Hello?
Oh, hiya, honey. When did you come in?
Just now.
And late, aren't you?
I just came out to see you.
Oh, I'm not singing anymore tonight, baby. In fact, I was just on my way home.
Well, maybe we can stop off for a bite to eat someplace, huh?
Yeah, I guess that'd be okay.
Fine. You have a car, don't you?
Yeah, don't you?
Not with me. A pal of mine dropped me off here.
Oh. Well, we can use mine.
Ready now?
Sure.
Let's go, then.
Say, you know something awful.
What?
I forgot your name.
Dixon. Johnny Dixon.
Oh, sure. I should have remembered that, but so many fellas come out here and all, I just...
I understand. Go ahead.
I'm parked right over here.
Okay.
Gee, what a night.
Yes. Beautiful.
You from around here?
No, I'm from up north.
Oh, sure. You told me that last night, didn't you?
Yes, I believe I did.
So many fellas tell you so many stories and all, you know.
I understand.
Here we are. You want to drive?
I'd rather not.
Okay, hop in.
Thanks.
Reason I asked you was so many fellas like to drive and all.
I guess I'm the exception.
You can say that again. Now, where to?
I suggest that you drive north.
But there's some good eating places up.
You drive north. Do as I say.
Not just a minute.
Look, honey, do you see this gun?
Hey.
I killed a cop with it a little while ago. So be a good girl and drive north. Tired, Flo?
Hmm?
I said, are you tired?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't relieve you of the driving. I just think it's better this way.
For you, maybe. What time is it?
Almost 4 a.m.
Tell me something, will you?
What?
Is this a regular business with you?
What do you mean?
Killing people? Cops?
No.
Why'd you do it?
He tried to interfere.
What with?
I was driving a car. It wasn't mine.
You steal cars, too,
huh? Yes. I'm quite versatile.
You sound like you were proud of it.
I am.
I'll stick to singing things.
Well, there's not a great deal of difference.
What do you mean?
We both enjoy prominence, being in the public eye.
Kidding?
Not at all. You're undoubtedly pleased when you see your picture in the paper. Well, I am, too.
You got a press agent?
No. But my picture was in True Detective magazine 3 times last year.
With numbers under it.
Still satisfied.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute.
What?
That's a bus up ahead there.
Yeah.
When you pass it, stop.
You mean you're getting out?
Yes. According to the gauge, your gas tank's just about empty. Hurry up, pass it.
Mister, that'll be a pleasure.
John Dixon left his car, left his unwilling companion after crossing the state line into Georgia. This was a mistake for him. A costly mistake, for he was now under the jurisdiction of the FBI. As are any and all criminals who cross state lines to avoid prosecution. Exactly 1 hour after Dixon left the nightclub singer, she was telling her story to special agents of the FBI.
Did you see this bus, Miss Harvey?
Yeah, sure.
Can you describe it?
Well, it was an interstate bus.
Was there any sign on it telling where it was bound?
I didn't see any. It was heading north, though.
And this was a little after 4 a.m.
That's right.
Now, I'll check with the bus terminal here, see what they can give us.
All right, Nick.
He sure had plenty of nerve.
How did you meet him?
Oh, he'd come into the club a couple times.
Do you recall who introduced you to him?
Nobody, really. In my line of work, you meet so many fellas and all.
Did he seem to know anyone else in the club?
No, I don't think so.
Had you ever been out with him before?
No.
The name he gave you was John Dixon.
That's right.
Probably an alias.
I wish I could describe him for you better, but like I said before, he looks just like 100 other guys.
That's the same report we received from the couple whose home we robbed. Did they give you anything?
Yes, a good deal. That bus was bound for Savannah.
Are you sure?
Yes, and it's an express. Doesn't make any stops.
Well, that's a break.
How do you mean?
We're going up to the Savannah field office tonight. We have tickets on a plane that leaves here in exactly 15 minutes.
No kidding.
We'll teletype a report ahead, but it's just possible that we might reach Savannah in time to meet Mr. Dixon in person. Due in right now, Nick.
I know.
I wish we had more to go on. His description, I mean.
Well, if he flagged the bus down on the highway, the driver should record him.
This could be it now.
Yes.
Let's stand over here.
Right.
Not many passengers. Can't be more than a dozen.
No.
This is Savannah. Last stop.
I see nothing but women.
Two soldiers there.
Yes, but no other man. Driver.
Yeah?
We're special agents of the FBI. Here are my credentials.
Oh. Well, what can I do for you?
We're looking for a man. He boarded your bus on the highway about 30 miles north of Jacksonville.
This bus?
I believe so. It was a little after 4 a.m.
Well, I was there a little after 4 a.m., but I didn't stop this bus for nobody.
Good morning.
momentarily close the Federal Bureau of Investigation file on John Dixon, murderer. We'll return to this case in just a moment. Let's open the dictionary to the letter S and look for the word society. Let's see, S-O-S-O-C. Oh, yes, here it is, society. And the dictionary says that society means a voluntary association of individuals for common purposes. Well, that certainly describes the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. The Equitable Society is a voluntary association of 3,200,000 men and women. The idea that led this group to get together is very simple. We of the Equitable Society believe that 3,200,000 pairs of shoulders are a lot broader than one pair. Our common purpose is to combine our dollars into a common protective fund which gives each of us far greater security than he could achieve by his own unaided efforts. In our dealings with the Equitable, we members receive the friendly service and personal attention that the word society implies. Moreover, since we are the sole owners of our society, we know that Equitable funds are at work for our benefit. And because the Equitable Society's investments cover America, they are at work for our fellow citizens, too. By serving its members, the Equitable Society serves America. And now, back to the file on John Dixon, murderer.
A clever fugitive, can find many ways to elude the law. He can travel on railroads, buses, cars, trains. He can move swiftly from city to city, from state to state. But the FBI moves swiftly, too. And with the invaluable aid of local police agencies and law-abiding citizens, it can track the cleverest fugitive down. The man who called himself John Dixon was extremely clever. His failure to board the bus, his complete disappearance, was proof of this. Returning to Jacksonville, the special agent sent for the woman who traveled with him, the nightclub singer, and questioned her again.
Look, I didn't really see him get on the bus, but what else was I to think?
Naturally, I presumed he was.
Naturally.
We found out now that he didn't. We have to look for other leads.
Oh, I got no idea what happened to him outside of what I told you.
Miss Harvey, we're trying to set up something definite to identify him by. Perhaps you can contribute to that.
I already told you what he looked like.
Yes, I know. But this time, see if you can recall some things he said.
We've already given his description to the authorities, Brunswick. That's the closest good-sized town after you let him off.
Did they see him there?
We've had no word.
What did you talk about on that ride last night, Miss Harvey?
Him, mostly.
Yes?
Sure had a thing for himself.
Bragging, was he?
But all the time.
Can you remember anything specific?
Being a larceny guy was a career with him, he said.
Did he mention any other jobs he'd done?
No.
Well, why did he refer to the career?
That was because he thought his work and my work were alike.
I see.
He was all puffed up because his picture had been in True Detective magazine 3 times last year.
His picture was in True Detective 3 times?
That's what he said.
In 1 year?
Yes.
Well, that could tell us who this boy really is, Nick.
Yeah.
See if we can get back copies of that magazine. Miss Harvey is going to help us do a little research.
The idle remark, the boasting remark made by the man called Dixon to the nightclub singer brought results. In copies of the detective magazine, one man's picture did appear in 3 issues. The girl identified him as Dixon. There was text accompanying these pictures, text that saved the FBI agents much time in determining the killer's true identity. They learned that his criminal record was a long and vicious one, that he had changed his name many times, that he was also adept at changing his complete identity. This was a valuable lead. This was something specific. This was what sent special agents to all clothing stores in Brunswick, Georgia, seeking knowledge of Dixon's whereabouts. Finally, in one store...
Let's see that picture again.
Surely. Here you are.
Yeah, that's the fellow, all right.
You're sure of that?
Yeah, positive.
And he came in here yesterday?
That's right, around noontime.
What did he buy?
Blue suit and brown felt hat and, oh, yes, a top coat.
Can you describe the coat?
It's a brown tweed, just like that one hanging on the rack there.
And what did he do with the clothes he was wearing?
Well, I took them with him, had me wrap them up for him.
I see.
He said he wanted them wrapped for mailing.
Did he say where to?
No. And I had no mind to ask him questions.
Why not?
Well, I noticed when he rolled his clothes up for packing that he put a gun in the bundle, too.
A clue that is 24 hours old. In 24 hours, a man can cross and recross our continent, but still there was now a clue. The special agents, armed with Dixon's complete description, visited all transportation centers in Brunswick. At the railroad station, they came up with a lead. The day before, a man they believed to be Dixon had inquired about trains to Atlanta. When informed that one did not leave for many hours, he inquired where he could hire a car. He was sent to a garage.
Look at this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the man?
Sure, that's him, all right. He's old as his mother was dying. He had to get out of town.
Did you rent him a car?
No, he couldn't do that, but he got up to Atlanta anyway.
Ah.
Well, we got him a lift with Doc Whitney. The doc was driving up there in his ambulance.
Sure, I remember him. He was a pleasant enough fella.
And you drove him right here to Atlanta?
Oh, I drove him right to the airport.
Where was he bound for?
Chicago.
How do you know?
Well, I put him on board the plane.
Yes, I remember him. He occupied seat 5 on yesterday's run.
Did you talk with him?
Mm-hmm.
What about?
Well, he said his mother was dying, and he inquired about the flight to Omaha.
Did he say he was going there?
He wanted to, yes.
I sold the ticket to a man yesterday. He looked like that picture, all right.
He went to Omaha?
Yeah, on the 9 o'clock flight.
Did he say his mother was dying?
Yeah, but his name wasn't Dixon. It was Snyder.
That's an alias he frequently used.
Well, he should be in Omaha right now.
That's the story, Mr. Bryant.
He arrived here in Omaha late last night.
Yes, he was on the 12:35 flight.
Any report on him at the airport?
He took a taxi into the center of town.
How do you know?
We contacted a soldier who was on the plane.
Yes.
The soldier reported that he ordered a cab. He sent word ahead to have it waiting.
Yes.
When he got into it, a civilian climbed in after him. In his description, it had to be Dixon.
And this soldier dropped him off downtown?
That's right.
What makes you think that his flight has ended here?
All the conversations he had along the way with ticket agents and other airline employees indicated that this was his destination.
Mm. Very well. We'll do a complete check on him here at once.
In Washington, Director Hoover instructed that no effort should be spared to locate Dixon and bring him to justice. Constant checks were made at the airport, railway, and bus stations, but no further information was developed. Special agents visited hotels, tourist camps, and boarding houses in an attempt to pick up the trail. It appeared quite likely that Dixon had stopped his desperate flight in Omaha and was somewhere in the vicinity. Relentlessly, the investigation continued. A double check was made at communication centers. Long-distance toll calls were examined. Dixon's photograph was shown to Pullman conductors, beer tavern operators. A crew of agents made regular rounds of nightclubs, but no trace of him was found. Once more, Dixon had completely disappeared.
Just a dead end, Nick.
I know.
We could only uncover something. Barrett's kind of a lead.
You're still convinced that he's here in Omaha?
Yes, everything points to this being his destination.
That's true.
I don't even think he's hiding out. You can't suspect it with this close.
Oh, excuse me. Warren speaking. Oh, yes, Frank. Yes, I see. Now, when was this? You'll have the place covered. Good. Thanks. Goodbye. Well, there's the lead you wanted, Roy.
What?
A waitress from the coffee shop at the Rome Hotel identified a picture of Dixon.
Really?
Had breakfast in there yesterday morning.
I see.
Someone's going to cover the place from now on.
Nick.
Yes?
I just remembered.
What?
The package. The package Dixon had wrapped for mailing in Brunswick.
Yes?
The
If this is his last stop, he could have had it sent here.
Yes.
Let's cover the post office and express companies at once.
Stop orders were placed in the post office and express companies against every name Dixon had ever used. The express company notified the FBI that a package had arrived that morning addressed to a John Snyder, one of Dixon's many names. Special agents sent to cover the express office found that the package had been sent from Chicago, Illinois, the day Dixon had been there. This looked open and shut, the end of the trail. But a week passed, a week of endless waiting, and Dixon made no effort to pick up the package. Dixon was in the city. The FBI was reasonably sure of that. It would have to be a matter of time.
Tired, Nick?
Just tired of waiting.
Why don't you go out and get some lunch? I'll stick around here for a while.
Yeah, maybe I will.
I'm sure that if we...
How do you do?
Hello?
I wonder if you have a package here for me, please.
What's the name?
Snyder. John Snyder.
I'll see.
This is it.
Yeah, come on.
Dixon.
What?
That's your name, isn't it?
No, I'm sorry.
There is a package here for you, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you.
Just a minute.
Look, I told you my name wasn't Dixon.
You're wasting your time.
Who are you?
We're a special agent for the FBI.
What do you want with me?
We'd like to talk to you about Florida.
I've never been there. In fact, I...
Hold it. Let go of me.
Oh, no.
I just remembered. We heard there was a gun in that package. Would you pick it up, please, Nick?
Right.
Come on, Dixon.
There are few heroics in the FBI. They depend on superior brain power, manpower, and firepower. They will never rest in their crusade to make crime an unprofitable business. No clue is too obscure, no time too long, no detail too small for their attention. Their entire resources are available at all times to all local law enforcement agencies and to you, the law-abiding citizen. This combination cannot be beaten. Many have tried it. To date, few have succeeded.
You'll hear about the disposition of this case in just a minute. Imagine the entire area of New York City's Manhattan Island, 31 square miles, covered with 4 feet of oil. That's the total amount of petroleum products, fuel oil, lubricating oil, aviation, and motor gasoline supplied to the Army in 1944. Requirements of the U.S. Navy have been equally staggering. So will you join the Equitable Society in a salute to the men of the petroleum industry? By working this miracle of war production, they have proved that no job is too difficult for the men and women of America and for the system of free enterprise that flourishes in America. For many years, funds of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States have aided in the development of the petroleum industry. Equitable dollars help drill the oil wells, help rear the derricks, help build the pipelines through which the lifeblood of modern warfare flows toward the fighting front. In wartime, Equitable Society dollars are fighting dollars. And at all times, they are security dollars. For you, your home, and your country.
Dixon, returned to Florida and turned over to local authorities, was convicted of murder in the first degree without recommendation for mercy.
The incidents used in tonight's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Van Cleve. Your narrator was Frank Lovejoy. This is your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. Now, this is Carl Frank speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time for This is Your FBI. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
I hope you enjoyed This is Your FBI. If you did, please send us a review or send us a Spotify comment. We appreciate both. Until next time, everyone, take care. And we'll be back soon.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.